You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. From swashbuckling space cowboys and cars that turned into robots to pizza-eating turtles and talking teddy bears, the 1980s saw a boom that turned toys into multi-billion dollar industries. Tomorrow, Netflix is releasing a new documentary series called The Toys That Made Us. The series looks at the history and impact of some of the most iconic and important toy lines, including Star Wars, Barbie, G.I. Joe, Legos, and others. We recently talked to the creator of the series, Brian Volk-Weiss, who joined us on the phone from Los Angeles. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Well, what made you want to tell the stories behind the toys of the 1980s?
You know, it's one of these things where that happens rarely, but you can turn your hobby into part of your quote-unquote job. And I basically saved the toys I had played with and then started buying toys that I didn't play with. Now, these days, they call that a collection, so I guess I became a collector. So I have a huge toy collection, and, you know, I'm a TV producer, and one thing led to another, and we were able to, you know, sell the show.
And from the perspective of a consumer, a kid who's playing with a toy, the parent who's buying a toy, you know, they see it on the shelf, they buy it, that's the whole story. And you started digging, and man, in the design of these toys, how they came into being, the business behind them, there's a lot of backstory there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to being a toy collector, I'm also a huge history buff. So, you know, at some point I started, you know, doing research with Google and Wikipedia and whatnot, and I realized, you know, even Star Wars and Barbie, which are probably the two toys where the most has been written down about them, there's huge gaps and lots of information is not out there. And that's Star Wars and Barbie. You know, we went to Japan, we went to Denmark, we shot in Mexico. We shot in five different cities in California. We went to 19 states. So we really tried to find a fun way to do a deep, deep historical dive into all of these iconic toys.
Brian, I'm not going to ask you to spoil any of the stories you tell, but is there a toy among the ones you featured that, you know, it just totally changed your mind or changed the way you think of that toy, knowing what you know now?
Absolutely. Every single toy had dozens of moments where I had goosebumps, and there were several times I was listening to interviews, and I actually teared up and cried. You know, there were toys like Star Wars, which I would say I probably have a PhD in, and then there were toys like Barbie where, you know, I didn't even get to the first grade. But, I mean, there was just one amazing story after another. And, you know, He-Man's another example of a toy that I did not play with when I was a kid, but I am now a huge He-Man fan, like, and I would say I'm obsessed with He-Man the same way I am with a lot of the other toys that I collect, which is a brand new thing for me.
I gotta ask this, Brian, because if you were a kid of my age, mostly a boy, maybe girls too, you've grown up with one just burning question that I've never had answered. How come my Star Wars guys couldn't bend their arms and knees, but my G.I. Joe guys could? Did you find that answer?
Yeah, we basically do answer that question in the G.I. Joe episode. Basically, Star Wars figures were revolutionary in many regards, but one of the ways that they were revolutionary was their size. Before Star Wars toys came out, most figures were 3 and 4 times bigger than Star Wars figures, and the reason why Star Wars figures were the size that they were was because from the beginning, and this was also pretty revolutionary, they wanted the figures to be able to fit in the vehicles. So, you know, long story short, you know, when it was time to do G.I. Joe and bring it back, you know, they were competing with Star Wars figures. So they had to find something that would make them unique from the Star Wars figures. That was the first thing. The second thing is, you know, G.I. Joe was basically born in the 60s. And the original inspiration for the G.I. Joe figures, the big ones, like the foot-tall ones, was those artists, you know, those little artists wooden mannequins that they used to sketch.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The original origin of, you know, the 12-inch G.I. Joe figures. So when the 80s G.I. Joe figures came about, they had to differentiate themselves from Star Wars, and it was kind of in the G.I. Joe blood to have a lot of those joints, and that's how that all happened. G.I. Joe!
I got to ask before I let you go, Brian, you've got a toy collection. You've filmed now all these different toys. Is there a holy grail out there, the toy you don't have yet?
Can I cheat and say there's several holy grails?
Sure.
Yeah, there's definitely, I want the G.I. Joe Whale, which is the hovercraft. There was a micro line of Star Wars figures right around Empire Strikes Back. I want one of the Millennium Falcons from the Micro line. And then also there was a Mego Star Trek The Motion Picture bridge that I've never even seen with my own eyes. And I want one of those very badly as well.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And the Masters of the Universe.
That was Brian Volk-Weiss, creator of the new Netflix documentary series, The Toys That Made Us, which debuts tomorrow. And we'd like to hear from you about your favorite toys at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite childhood toy, whatever era you grew up in? Maybe you were a kid during the great toy surge of the 1980s, or a parent. What were your favorites? What were you sick of? And is there a special toy this holiday season that your kids are begging you to buy? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So what is it that makes a toy an enduring classic? Chris Bench joins us now. He's the chief curator at the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. Chris, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, we just heard about that new Netflix show on toys. I'm guessing, having talked to you before, Chris, this is the kind of show that's right up your alley.
It is, and in fact, I consulted early on with the producers, and they took some of those backstories from us and then went off and did their production.
And what was it about the 1980s? It does seem, and maybe it's just because I was, you know, a kid then, but it seems like that was peak toy in some ways. What was it about the 80s era?
I think what had really broken the flood dam for toys to really issue forth were things like Star Wars that had proven to people in every form of media that the toys could make more money than the motion picture or the comic book or the TV show.
And let's give a listen to the movie Spaceballs, where they tackle this issue, these sort of Star Wars science fiction satire.
Merchandising, where the real money from the movie is made. Spaceballs the t-shirt, Spaceballs the coloring book, Spaceballs the lunchbox, Spaceballs the breakfast cereal, Spaceballs the flamethrower. The kids love this one. Last but not least, Spaceballs the doll, me.
May the Schwartz be with you.
Only very slightly exaggerated there by now. And, you know, and now we have, you know, the Transformers were big in the 80s, and we're still getting movies about them, bigger and bigger movies about Transformers.
That's right. Now it's all one fluid pattern, from toys to media, from media back to toys. And one of the worries in the toy industry this year is that there will be a glut of characters, so many that people stop caring about them because there are just too many to get invested with.
Now, in the National Toy Hall of Fame, you inducted some new toys and games this year. And it's interesting, kind of the opposite direction in some ways, some classics, some real humble ones like the paper plane, which I love, and I'm famous for making my trademark paper planes around the office. Talk about the appeal of the non-merchandise toy.
You know, there is some throwback kind of motif going on in this year's inductees to the National Toy Hall of Fame. And one of the requirements to get into the Hall of Fame is that you have to have been on the market for at least 20 years. So that thins out the Hatchimals and the LOL toys that are so hot this year. It means that it forces our panelists who make the selections to look at toys that have shown proof that they can stand the test of time, that generation after generation can find play value in things like the paper airplane or the wiffle ball or the board game Clue.
And Clue, of course, did turn into a movie. I can't see a Wiffle Ball, the movie, being a big phenomenon. But these are things that, multiple generations have embraced. And that's the key to being a Hall of Fame-level toy.
It is. And it's useful in a season where often parents, grandparents are scrambling for the hottest item. What just came out? What's getting heavy rotation in television commercials, in online unboxing videos? And it's nice to remind them that there are toys with consistent play value out there that might not be top of mind in all the hot lists, but are nevertheless ones worth remembering for now or for future play with your child, grandchild, whoever.
Yeah, I remember an older nominee for your Hall of Fame, Legos. You know, I played with them as a kid, and that was one I happily bought. And they've been sort of reinvented in some ways since I was a kid. But, you know, that's one I definitely, we had boxes and boxes of them and a few of them on the floor, and you step on them. But that's, kids play with them, then they introduce them to their kids 20, 30 years later.
That's right. We see a sort of 25-30 year cycle. It's the 25th anniversary of Tickle Me Elmo, so he is back again because kids who grew up with them are now parents, and if you turned out all right, you often want your kids to have the toys that you grew up with.
We're talking about some of our favorite toys and some classics with Chris Bench, chief curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite toy from your childhood? Is there something, a game or a toy that you played with as a kid and then got for your own kids? And what are you seeing as the hot must-have items this holiday season when it comes to toy shopping? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll take your calls and continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret, and we're talking about toys.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Transformers, robots in the sky.
Every day can be a Care Bear day. You can play in a caring way.
They'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe.
Pony. And the masters of the universe.
Is into her Ferrari. What a dream. She's into driving with Ken to the party scene.
Ferrari.
Star Trek. Star Trek.
Back. He's a Lego maniac.
You are unwise to lower your defenses.
Only you can decide with Star Wars toys.
We're picking up our conversation with Chris Bench, chief curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York, talking about classic toys. You can join in with your favorites at 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Paul is on the line in Fort Atkinson. Paul, hi.
Hey, I'm just kind of wondering whatever happened to the old classic micro machines. In particular, I used to like the Star Trek micro machines. I don't know if anybody carries them anymore. I haven't seen them around.
Micro machines. That's not one on my radar, Chris. Maybe I was the wrong age. Do you remember those?
I do. We have examples of them in the museum's collection. They're about a fifth of the size of a Hot Wheels or a Matchbox, maybe even smaller. They were nice and inexpensive. They could fit in your pocket.
Oh, okay.
They were great for all those reasons.
And is there something like that on the market now, a really tiny car like that or machine?
You know, I'm not thinking of cars, but there's certainly lots of little collectibles like Shopkins and things of that ilk that are really appealing to lots of kids, where you can collect the entire set and always need more and buy them in packages where it's a surprise what you find inside.
Paul, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Jim with us in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, I'm a kid of the 60s, and the classic toy, and it's still a classic toy, what were Lionel O-scale electric trains. I still have the ones that my father gave me. They still run. And I took my kids to Harry Potter World, and J.K. Rowling's. She sold the rights to the Harry Potter train to Lionel, and I have that And so that was something that related to my children. And, you know, and she sold her castle rights to Lego, another classic toy. But Lionel Trains, I'd be interested in your guest comments about them.
Before we let you go, Jim, I mean, do you still have them up and running? I think we lost Jim a little bit there, only sort of hearing him. But Lionel Trains, that is a classic, Chris.
It is, and they got inducted into the National Toy Hall of Fame in 2006. They have proven such durability across time from early in the 1900s right up to the present. Of course, Jim proves the question I've always had with Lionel. Were you actually giving it to your child, or was this a gift for yourself?
And it's something, yeah, and that's something that both generations can play with. And, yeah, the grown-up maybe has as much or maybe more fun than the kid. Jim, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. A couple of my favorites, Spirograph and Light Bright.
Okay. These I both played with, Kevin. Chris, those are definitely classics, right?
They are, and both of them have been finalists for the National Toy Hall of Fame. They haven't been lucky enough to be selected, but I had great fun with a new Spirograph set that was sent to me earlier this year by a manufacturer promoting it. It is back in its original form that Kenner put out in the 1960s, and those kinds of op art designs are every bit as current now as they were 50 years ago.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Light Bright seemed kind of like a high-tech toy. It was, you know, you plugged it in, it lit up, and now it seems maybe refreshingly low technology.
It's basically pixels that we play with on much finer scales than Light Bright allowed with those pegs.
Kevin, thanks for that call. We're talking to Chris Bench from the National Toy Hall of Fame looking at classic toys. We go next to Molly in Baraboo. Molly, hi.
Hi. I think the toy I remember most from my childhood, which probably is not in your Hall of Fame, was a Magic Genie bottle.
A Magic Genie bottle?
Yeah, it was just like a Magic 8 Ball, in that you would ask it a question, but you would take the lid off the top and smoke would come out of it.
Whoa.
And then you put the lid back on and a little door at the bottom, you'd open it up and it would have your answer. And I'm sure it was toxic, and I'm sure it was a fire hazard, and my father had to fix it many times before it magically disappeared from my life.
You got some good advice from it, though, right, Molly?
Right, I'm sure I did.
Molly, thanks for the call. Yeah, I remember the Magic 8 Ball. I do not remember the Genie bottle, Chris.
I don't either, and I'm going to hit eBay as soon as we finish this interview and see if I can snag one for the museum's collection.
Yeah, thanks, Molly. And I was going to ask, actually, Chris, have things like eBay and other ways of buying stuff used online upped our toy game? We can maybe go back and find that toy we remember as a kid?
It's way easier. When you used to have to drag yourself around early on Saturday morning to garage sales, to flea markets, to antique shops, that was a lot of work. And now with just the tips of your fingers, you can scroll through so many options and really delve into those toys you had or the toys that you wished you'd had.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We go next to Todd on the line in Beaver Dam. Todd, hi.
How are you guys doing today?
Good. What do you got for us, Todd?
Say, one of the things, I grew up in the Apollo era, and I remember Major Matt Mason and having all of the Major Matt Mason figures, and I had to have the moon crawler, and then the sadness when you bend them so much and then their legs would break.
Oh, no. And how big were these, Todd? Were these like the old G.I. Joe size or smaller or bigger?
They were about 4.5 inches tall.
Gotcha. Todd, thanks a lot for that. So he remembers Major Matt Mason, and I'm guessing that wasn't the only NASA-themed space toy back in the day, Chris.
But it sure got a lot of promotion. It was a Mattel toy. It was a competitor to G.I. Joe, and I know that I put Major Matt Mason on my personal wish list one Christmas, and Todd was a lot luckier kid than I was. I didn't get him.
Okay. Well, thanks. Glad you told us about him. We'll go next to Deborah on the line in Milwaukee. Deborah, hi.
Well, it's got to be Spirograph.
Another Spirograph.
I can still, when I doodle, still do the images by memory.
You without the spiral, like without the tool?
Yep. I mean, then it's not that difficult. But at an estate sale about 10 years ago, I bought a Spirograph product, and it was digital. And you'd, like, enter an image in, It had a little keyboard, and then you could do up to 7 images, and then you played it. It would be like you could make a rabbit jumping out of a hat. I don't know what it's called. Maybe the Spirograph guy or the toy expert there has heard of it, but it makes noises like it when you enter the image in.
Gotcha. Deborah, thank you so much for telling about that, a high-tech Spirograph. And, you know, I wonder, Chris, we've seen this big resurgence lately, or we did, in adult coloring books. I could see Spirograph for grown-ups being just as big a hit, a nice relaxing thing, drawing and pattern making.
It is. In fact, I saw it in craft books and how-to magazines even a year or two ago, saying, you remember this as a kid, now you can do it on your walls, you can print it on your sheets, whatever kind of craftiness you and your Etsy-based projects want to do.
Time for one more caller. Daniel is with us in Platteville. Daniel, hi.
Hi, I want to mention something about the Micro Machines. They still make them. When they came out with the new Star Wars Episode 7, they actually brought those back, and you can pick them up at some toy stores.
Daniel, thanks for letting us know. So Micro Machines do still exist, and I guess if you make any toy, you're going to make a Star Wars version of it. Thanks for that call. Chris, as we wrap up, is there a toy out there you feel maybe hasn't gotten its fair recognition in the pantheon of classic toys?
You know, the one that is currently the longtime reject from the National Toy Hall of Fame, it's been a finalist 6 times and hasn't made it in, is the Magic 8 Ball. So that goes along with Molly's Magic Genie Bottle.
All right. And can the public influence that decision if people want to lobby for a toy? Can they reach out to the Toy Hall of Fame?
They can. I keep telling listeners like yours everywhere, write your proposal on a $50 bill, send it to me, and I will take really good care of that nomination.
Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Chris Bench, Chief Curator at the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. Been talking about some of your favorite classic toys. You can keep sharing your favorite toys of all time. Email ideas@WPR.org. Will the 8-Ball make the Hall of Fame? Reply hazy. Ask again later.